from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. It has been almost a year since California began overhauling its overcrowded prison system, and the goal? To shed about 35,000 inmates from in-state prisons and cut the prison budget is underway, but critics in law enforcement and elsewhere fear the reforms may lead to higher crime, and there are concerns as well over the effects of the number of inmates diverted out of state prison into county-run jails. As part of the KQED news series Prison Break, we'll discuss the realignment program and how it has fared so far. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Last October, California began its unprecedented prison realignment program, brought on by the state's having been ordered to reduce its prison population by about 35,000 inmates. This occurred after the state prisons were ruled unable to provide adequate health care, a judgment upheld by the United States Supreme Court. A shift of low offenders to the county jails has occurred, and the prisons have been reduced dramatically, going from being 180% over capacity to 150%, or to look at it another way, roughly over 15% more prisoners and probation cases that normally would be sent to or handled by the state prison are now under county control, which in turn has led to many county jails becoming more crowded. In papers filed in federal court on Friday, the state argues that it can provide adequate health care for 7,000 more inmates than the number mandated by the court. Beginning Monday of this week, KQED and the Center for Investigative Reporting launched a multi-platform collaboration to examine the impact of the realignment of the California prison system, and that is our focus in this morning's opening forum hour. We have a number of people who are going to talk with us and help us flesh out what lies ahead as well as what's been going on here. First, we want to talk to Michael Montgomery, who's here with us in studio, reporter for KQED News and public safety reporter for California Watch, who has been watching diligently this and, by the way, who will be actually on a criminal justice reform in California program, Prison Break, which I mentioned before, which will be hosted by our own Scott Schaefer this Friday, 7:30 p.m. on KQED 9. Michael, good to have you here in studio.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's talk about these numbers first. It's been pretty dramatic reductions.
Absolutely. And as you said, last year, Governor Brown ordered this plan to overhaul the prison system, criminal justice system, known as realignment. Since then, we have seen a dramatic drop in the state inmate population, certain kinds of felons being diverted, redirected to counties, county jails. That's set in motion a series of other consequences in the jails. But for the prison system, it's been a dramatic change. However, we are now seeing this legal tussle over the numbers. How far does the prison system need to go in terms of this reduction to create humane conditions, good conditions in terms of health care and other areas? The department says, and we're really talking about 7,000 inmates here. The department says is talking about a target of about 117,000. The current court order talks about 110,000. The department wants the judges to basically lift that cap or that level to this other level, and the legal tussle is about that. In the meantime, the court has said that if California cannot meet this level, 110,000 or so, then they have to consider releasing inmates. And this is what we saw last week in this legal tussle. It's not settled, and we don't really know where it's going to go. But the headline, I think, for the department is that the inmate population is down considerably, dramatically over the last year.
The state attorneys have said the original cap is, I'm quoting now, unnecessary and legally inappropriate. But this could be a long legal fight up ahead, couldn't it?
It could. And one of the other issues is you have 10,000 inmates out of state. The California wants to bring about 4,000 of those inmates back, but they can't do that if the current cap remains in place. They want to bring those 4,000 back in part because it could save hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, there has been dramatic reduction, but I happen to hear the piece you did, a very good piece, by the way, about what's going on in Fresno in the county jail there. There are no programs, there are no jobs. prisoners are literally on the roof, no sun or fresh air. I mean, you know, I don't in any way mean to bring levity to this. It's really pretty dreadful, and all would prefer to be in state prison.
Well,
all that you spoke to.
There's a concern in some counties that the overcrowding crisis in the state prison system is being moved to the counties. Now, that's not true in all counties. San Francisco County, for example, which we'll look at it on our TV special on Friday, is doing very well, as are other counties. But there has been a disparity between among counties that pre-exists realignment, and we're seeing that now play out. Perhaps it's not surprising. Nevertheless, what is quite striking in Fresno is seeing jail inmates who are serving long sentences but no longer in state prison. So they're, you know, going to be spending 5 or 10 years in a jail system that was really built for stays of no longer than a year.
Yeah, on the other hand, San Francisco has been able to use some of the revenue for rehabilitation programs well. In Fresno, they're just buying beds, right?
Right. A lot of jails, a lot of counties are having to use a good chunk of their realignment money to expand jail capacity to deal with this. So, you know, it's a question of, you know, are the negative consequences going to outweigh the benefits? We don't know that yet. We could see a variety of consequences playing out around the state.
Well, let's bring Matthew Cade into this discussion. He's Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, joins us from the state capitol. And Matthew Cade, good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let me just, from your perspective, ask directly how you see this unfolding. I mean, is it effective at this point from your point of view?
Oh, well, I think so. As you pointed out, we were certainly in a prison crisis. We didn't have much of a choice. The U.S. Supreme Court had ordered the reductions. The governor was facing a $26 billion deficit, much of that going to prisons in California. And so something clearly had to be done. And so we faced either a choice of early release or a redirection program. And so with the consent of the sheriffs and others, we entered into public safety realignment. I think from the prison front, it has been successful. We have not only seen our population and crowding levels drop, but violence in prison is down dramatically. And we are also seeing reductions in recidivism for the first time. And I think, importantly, maybe most importantly for the case, the judge in the medical case has said care is so good that we should be ending the receivership soon. And it appears that, again, the quality of care in the mental health case is improving dramatically, and the courts just dismissed the dental case. So it's doing its job on the state front for sure.
So this number 7,000, how do you derive that?
Well, the court said that we had to get the overall population of the prison system down to 137.5% of the prison's design capacity. And so, you know, you do the math and you end up, our design capacity is about 80,000. You do the math, they want to get us to about 110,000. And we have said we think we can run the prisons in a constitutional, effective way at a little greater density, at about 145% of design capacity, and the difference is about 7,000 inmates.
We should mention that about $10 billion a year from what I would characterize and has been characterized as the thinning general fund goes into essentially the realignment program. That's more than the UC and CSU system combined, and it only applies to parolees and inmates who were sentenced after the 1st of October 2011. And as I'm sure you're aware, well aware, Matthew Cade, I'd like you to address this. Law enforcement has expressed concern about classifying for release those who were, well, based on their most recent convictions.
Well, keep in mind that everybody in California is supervised when they leave prison or jail under realignment. So it just depends on who's going to supervise them. Under public safety realignment, those who leave prison and with a current serious or violent crime go to be supervised by a parole agent, and those whose most recent crime is non-serious, non-violent, are supervised by a probation officer. And in either case, we think that supervision is appropriate. And so I don't think the distinction in that respect is all that important.
Are there other state resources that could go to the counties in proportion to the prisoner burden? I'm thinking about there's been talk about furloughs, about, well, readdressing good time behavior, those sorts of things.
Well, you know, the courts have asked us, you know, is there more you can do? And of course, there's always more that's possible. It's just a question of really what's appropriate. We have effectively shifted the burden of the non-serious, non-violent offenders to the counties. We think that really the state should be supervising and should be incarcerating the serious, violent offenders and sex offenders. And so our position back to the court is we think that realignment was the most prudent approach, and that further releases beyond that in realignment, it really wouldn't be the best thing overall for public safety in California. And, of course, as you've mentioned, there's other things we can do. You know, we can send inmates out of state. We can do additional forms of in-state incarceration. But, again, our view is if we can run the prison safely with a few more inmates in there, then that's what we should do.
We're talking again with Matthew Cato, Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. He's with us from Sacramento. I guess you heard us speaking with Michael Montgomery, who's been covering the story. And in his story, a woman named Margaret Mims, whom you may know, the Fresno County Sheriff, says they weren't prepared for the influx. And I'm quoting her now, "It was disappointing that we were hit so hard so fast with many more inmates, and we're all scrambling to figure out how we're going to deal with it."
Well, I think it's certainly true that some counties had a harder time adjusting to realignment than others, and you know, Sheriff Mims is one of the you know, the best sheriffs in the state, and she's a terrific law enforcement officer. But she did have a disadvantage in that her jail was already overcrowded before realignment, and I think there's been some struggle locally in making decisions about how to best spend the resources that realignment's brought forward. But overall, the impact on jails statewide hasn't been as dramatic as we thought it would be. Overall, jail populations in California are about what they were 2 or 3 years ago. And so, you know, it's the problem is that in certain counties, like in Fresno, they have been hit particularly hard because of where they started from.
Well, there's also kind of a warehousing in some of these county jails rather than in the state prisons, isn't there?
Well, sure. State prisons were certainly built for and intended to house inmates over long periods of time, and the jails weren't. And so that's another area we've got to try to address. You know, one of the issues that we're trying to focus on is these long-term offenders, and the administration has continued to work with the counties to see if there's some way we might be able to have some of those longer-term offenders still go to state prison in the future. But again, we don't have to solve that problem today because you don't serve all those years at once. You serve them 1 year at a time. And so we feel like we need to get that addressed here in the next year or so, but it's not a problem we have to necessarily address immediately.
No, the bottom line I'm hearing from you is you're pretty upbeat about realignment and where it's going.
Well, you know, I'll tell you again, it's something that was in many respects foisted upon us. We had to do something. We couldn't release 35,000 inmates onto the streets. And the county stepped up and worked out a partnership agreement with us. It was the best thing, I think, at the time that we could have chosen. And because of leadership locally and leadership statewide, it's worked about as well as anyone could expect it. Not perfect, but pretty good start. And so I think it's something we can build on.
I thank you for joining us. That's Matthew Cato, the Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, joined us from the state capitol. Let's bring Dan McClair into this. He's Executive Director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice, also faculty member at San Francisco State. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Michael.
Well, what'd you think about what you heard from the Secretary?
Well, I agree with everything he said. I think in looking at what's happening in California right now, you have to put it in a historical perspective. We just lived through a 30-year bubble that was artificially created. It was a crisis. It was the result of bad policy. And the bad policy began in 1976 when Governor Brown signed the Determinant Sentencing Act that eliminated rehabilitation as a goal of sentencing in California. At that time, we had 20,000 people in our state prisons. Between then and roughly 2004, the population in our state prisons rose to about a peak of 172,000, just that short time span. Nothing like it ever occurred in history. It created just abominable conditions in our state prisons. Nobody could walk through San Quentin or Folsom or Soledad and not be shocked at what they saw. When you go walking through gymnasiums where you had 300 and 500 people stacked three high on bunk beds, it was crazy. And the Supreme Court, this Supreme Court, arguably one of the most conservative Supreme Courts in American history, told California that you had to reduce your prison population because your prisons were being run in an inhumane fashion.
One justice called it cruel and unusual punishment.
You know, and so this is just what we're doing right now. What realignment is doing is trying to restore balance into the system. Going back to 1990. During the Duke Majian administration, now we remember him. He was one of the more conservative governors we've had in California history. The prison boom began under him, or at least took off under him. By the end of his administration, he had recognized that the direction this was going was in the direction of an inevitable crisis. So he put together a commission to look at options. Now, that commission published a report in 1990 that said that California's criminal justice system was out of balance. It was heading towards a major crisis, and the problem was we were overemphasizing prisons over community corrections. And
this was before three strikes.
And they recommended that the state shift resources to the counties, exactly what we did under AB 109, under the current realignment. So the current realignment law, the policy, really has its origins in a crisis that was recognized back in the 1980s by Governor Duke Majian. The only problem is during the 1990s, the only thing that happened is things got worse. So it's important to keep it in perspective. We went through a 30-year bubble, and we created a crisis we didn't need to create, and now we're in a position where we have to fix it.
Ann McAlare, again, is executive director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. Let me go back, if I may, to Michael Montgomery. Michael, there's a lot of criticism, though, about not only realignment, but about the papers that were filed on Friday to make the cap higher by 7,000. There's a lot of law enforcement concern, as I mentioned, Matthew Hale. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I want to actually go back to what Dan was talking about. You know, I've been spending a lot of time out in the field talking to people outside of the Bay Area. And one, I think, fact that they would want to add to this mix is that during this 30-year period, crime has also fallen to historic lows. Now, we know that crime has fallen in other places that didn't implement these kind of get-tough penalties. But I think there's a concern that when you change course, we're going to see an uptick in crime. And I think Sheriff Mims in Fresno, who we've talked about already, is seeing an uptick in property crime. She can't correlate it with realignment. I think law enforcement people around the state are concerned about this. Secretary Kate said that folks coming out of state prison are under some kind of supervision, and that's true. However, a lot of counties are not set up to supervise felons in the way that state parole agents can do.
Was there a report by the probation officers that said that they're doing better, that's more efficacious on the county level than it was on the state level?
In terms of number of people returning to jail or prison, that's true. However, in terms of crime rates, there's a concern that people are watching this closely. I think Dan can probably chime in on this. Overall, we're not seeing any huge spike in crime rates. But at local levels, there's concern. And one reason is that, again, we talk about
these, it's also the economy.
Well, it's the economy. When we talk about these nonviolent offenders, I just want to throw one other fact out. Even in San Francisco County, what they're finding with the men and women coming out of state prison who are now under county supervision, on average, they have 8 prior felonies. That's a significant record. And some of them, the priors can be violent. It's just the most recent. So, you know, San Francisco feels they can handle that caseload. But you know, that's the situation. And I think there's concern at a local level among law enforcement. However, we haven't seen any major crime spikes.
Well, a couple other concerns we ought to mention here. And Dan, I'd like you to address this. I mean, there's concern there's maybe too much penalizing of low-level crimes at too high a rate. And also that there are too many people sitting in jail who can't afford bail.
Yeah. Well, there's a number of issues here. And actually, just on the crime, the relationship between crime and incarceration, we've actually studied this. And a lot of criminologists have taken a look at it. And there's really not a connection between the number of people you have in prison and your crime rate. It is related to other factors. Just to actually give you an example, because California, we kind of carried that experiment to the maximum. We've seen it on the juvenile side. Now, the juvenile side, we've cut the number of kids in state youth prisons by 90% since 1996. Wow. We had 10,000 kids in the California Youth Authority in 1996. We have less than 1,000 today. What happened during that time? What happened to the crime rate? Because this goes to it. Well, it's now at 40-year lows. This is the best behaved generation of kids on at least in the last 50 years since we've been keeping relatively accurate crime records. So the crime rate was not related to the fact that we were incarcerating fewer kids or incarcerating more kids. So we've kind of debunked that one. However, let's go to the issue about the individual offender, the person who has been in and out of prison for many years. The prison system, we have to recognize, is a failure. It doesn't rehabilitate. So how do you take that individual offender and make that individual offender less likely to commit a future crime? You address circumstances in that person's life. That's
the key word here. I keep hearing incentivize.
Well, yeah, there's all fancy words we used to: rehabilitation, reintegration, reassimilation. There's a lot of words we throw around. It's really not that complex. For people to make it, to succeed in the outside world, I always like to say it comes down to three things. You need a place to live, you need an income, and you need a support system. And a lot of the people who have been the frequent flyers in the prison system don't have those elements. When they come back to the community, the way we've done criminal justice policy is we incarcerate them for a period of time, put them back on the street, and let them sink or swim on their own. Now, too often, even the highly motivated ones can't overcome that 10-foot wall. They may be able to climb 8 feet, but, you know, that wall is just a little too high and there's no one there to prop them up and push them over the top. So to succeed, you've got to implement policies that address the needs of the individual offender at the community level. This is basic criminal justice 101. It's one of the underlying foundations of the realignment. It is what has, you know, generally accepted within the criminal justice field. And it's exactly what we have not been doing for the last 30 years.
I'm going to invite those of you listening to join this discussion. In fact, we welcome your participation in the conversation. If you have something you'd like to add to it or contribute, or if you have a question, feel free to join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your call, so feel free to join the program, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post any questions or comments you have on our website. We invite you to do that as well, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our handle is @KQEDForum. We're talking in studio with Michael Montgomery, who is a reporter for KQED News and public safety reporter for California Watch, and with Dan McAlare, who is executive director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice and a faculty member at San Francisco State. We also spoke with Matthew Cate, secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And we are going to hear from the ACLU as well. Alan Hopper will be joining us. But feel free to join us. Those of you listening, you're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. It's been almost a year now since California began overhauling its overcrowded prison system, and the goal is to shed about 35,000 inmates from in-state prisons and cut the prison budget. There are critics in law enforcement and elsewhere, however, who fear the reforms may lead to higher crime. And as we've heard, and we spoke earlier with Matthew Cate from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, program seems to be moving along, well, better than some of those might have imagined, although there are still the critics and still the concerns. There's a KQED news series, Prison Break, which will discuss the realignment program and how it's fared so far. In fact, you can watch it Friday at 7:30 on Channel 9, hosted by KQED Scott Schaefer. We spoke with Matthew Cade, and we're speaking with Michael Montgomery, reporter for KQED News and public safety reporter for California Watch, and Dan McAleer, who is executive director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. And we are, of course, going to hear from you, our listeners. First, we want to hear from Alan Hopper, though, who is criminal justice and drug policy director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California. Alan Hopper, good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Thanks for being here. Well, the ACLU does have some concerns, and let's find out what those are. They're they have a good deal to do, it seems to me, with, as usual, civil liberties.
Yeah, go figure, right? also, though, just, I mean, we do see this as a civil liberties issue. And when I say this, I mean the criminal justice system in California. And what has been historically, as Dan referred to a few minutes ago, you know, this 30-year boom in prison construction and in incarceration rates throughout the state that have taken us to the brink of, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole to say fiscal disaster in terms of our budget and the amount of money we spend, and also, you know, a constitutional disaster. We've got this now U.S. Supreme Court decision saying that people are dying in our prisons because they are so overcrowded. So, yes, we do see it as a civil liberties issue.
Well, you also see it, though, as not only, and you're intimating this in your comments, an undue burden on taxpayers, but that maybe inmates ought to be help more instead of, I mean, there ought to be concern about getting them jobs with taxpayers' money as opposed to, or crime prevention as opposed to what's being done here?
Well, that's exactly right. And not only for just sort of basic humanitarian and civil liberty, you know, issues and concerns and reasons, but it just makes sense. I mean, the buzzword of the day in criminal justice circles and that runs throughout even the realignment legislation is evidence-based alternatives to incarceration as a response to especially low-level nonviolent criminal behavior. And what that refers to, evidence-based, is programs that have been implemented in other places that have been demonstrated to reduce the recidivism rate, which is all about public safety, keeping us safe, reducing the rate at which folks continue to commit crimes in the future once they're released from the criminal justice system. California has one of the highest recidivism rates in the country, nearly 70%.
Well, I think I saw a 12-step program that you may have authored to cure what's been described as prison addiction in California, and that was put out in March. It's on your website, is it?
That's right. We've done two reports now focusing on realignment and these issues. The first one was the 12-step report plan that we introduced and published shortly after realignment was enacted. In fact, within a couple weeks of having that legislation signed and become law, we had that report in the hands of decision makers and policymakers across the state. We also issued a more substantial report 6 months into realignment after, the October 1st implementation date. We released a report 6 months in sort of looking at what the counties were doing with the money they were getting from the state and describing the ways in which counties seemed to be or not to be actually embracing and implementing these sorts of evidence-based alternatives that were strongly encouraged, though not required, by the legislation.
You know, we're talking to Alan Hopper. We're going to go to your calls in just a minute, criminal justice and drug policy director for the ACLU of Northern California. I had alluded, Alan Hopper, just a few moments ago to the fact that there are many who are being held in county jails awaiting their day in court, but being unable to afford bail. I mean, I saw a figure as high as over 70%.
That's correct, and it is one of the easy sort of low-hanging fruit in terms of reforms that could be enacted at the state level that would and at the county level that would help to immediately, significantly reduce the sort of overcrowding problem that Sheriff Mims has right now in Fresno. We do statewide on any given day about 70% on average of the people who are in a county jail are there not having been convicted of any crime, but as you say, awaiting their day in court, being held pre-trial. And these are folks, the vast majority of whom have been, their case has been looked at by a judge, and a judge has determined, look, it's not going to be too dangerous to the public for me to release you pending your trial, so I'm going to set bail. If a judge believes that it's too dangerous, that it's too dangerous for someone to be released pending trial because of the evidence against them or because of their past criminal history, the judge isn't supposed to set bail, because whether a person is able to come up with the money to pay a bail bondsman or not really has nothing to do with how likely it is they're going to commit a new crime. And so what we have are people who are languishing in our county jails simply because they can't afford to pay bail, not because it's too dangerous to release them. And there's a bill now pending in the legislature, authored by Senator Lonnie Hancock, that would, it's a very modest set of reforms. It would encourage but not require judges to at least consider the possibility of releasing on their own recognizance, that is, without having to post bail, folks who present the lowest level of public safety risk, and also would encourage and specifically authorize counties to establish pretrial monitoring and pretrial services programs. Now, this bill has been opposed by, unsurprisingly, many of the folks who run bail bond companies. It's also opposed by the district attorneys and the Sheriff's Association. We have concerns that because of that opposition, we won't see the legislation passed in Sacramento. And this is the exact kind of reform that could take a lot of the pressure off of county jails to help them, the counties, be better able to implement realignment.
Alan Hopper from the ACLU of Northern California, thank you so much for joining us on Forum.
Thank you, Michael.
And we're going to have you join us now. In fact, let's go right to your calls here. Brad, you're up first. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a comment about, you know, realignment based on personal experience. I was a non-violent offender that had gone through the San Francisco system for a drug possession charge. I thought I had finished the process, moved to Los Angeles to be a dad. I was all of a sudden, one day, years later, I was put in jail. I was picked up by the routine traffic stop. I end up in the Twin Towers of Los Angeles County. Turns out I had a bench warrant. You know, I was in the phone book, of course. And, no one even told me what I was in for. And I nearly got beat to death.
You mean by a fellow inmate?
By a group of Hispanic men. It was a hate crime. And, everyone says the only thing anyone agreed, basically I was put in isolation with a concussion. The deputies laughed at me because I was in there for a suspended license. I have a suspended license? What's going on? And, so then I was released. You know, I posted bail. It cost me a lot of money, a lot of lost work. And, you know, the charges up in San Francisco were later dismissed after I, you know, but basically what I understood and what I've been told, you know, is that the county jail system is actually the most violent part of the California system. And, I don't know how to think you guys would like to hear that.
Well, you've been through an ordeal, and I appreciate your being so candid about it and giving us your narrative, and I think Dan McGlare has some comments for you.
You know, a story like that, it just demonstrates the problems inherent
in the system doesn't work.
You know, when I hear stories like that, the first question that comes up is, why is someone like that taking up jail space? And when counties complain that they have a shortage of jail space, it's because they're using that jail space on people like this. That's a waste. It's a waste of public dollars. It puts and it compromises public safety. There's no need to do it. I want to go back.
Also compromise his safety, his personal
Absolutely.
safety.
Absolutely. I want to go back to one of the points that Alan was making earlier about the 71% of people in our jails in California are awaiting trial. That's a problem. Now, we've got 58 counties in this state, and we got 58 different criminal justice systems. Now, one county, Santa Cruz County, which is a very well-run criminal justice system, we've got a very good chief probation officer, a very good sheriff. They had the same problem a few years ago, where they had a pretrial population of about 70%. And they realized they had to do something about it. So the sheriff and the probation chief got together and they said, okay, we've got to come up with a solution. The sheriff started to identify the population in his jail that could be potentially released if they were provided some degree of supervision. The probation department agreed that they would provide the supervision pre-trial, not depending on whether or not somebody could make bail. So they went ahead. They implemented this. Within 2 years, they had reduced their population, their pretrial population, from 70% to 50%, went from having a crisis in jail space to no crisis at all to actually having a surplus. There is absolutely no reason why other counties in the state of California could not be doing the same thing. It is the reason that San Francisco has surplus jail space right now is because we have a very well-developed pretrial system. We have very excellent an excellent chief probation officer. We had 30 years of Mike Hennessy as sheriff. But this is going to be the problem that we're going to confront as realignment moves forward. It's the individual counties and their capacity to implement good policies. It's more of a bureaucratic problem than it is an inmate problem.
Sir, those who would quickly argue also that you could reduce the prison population dramatically if you change the drug laws. I mean, this is a kind of elephant in the room and has been the pachyderm in the room for a long time now. I want to actually go to some of your emails here. Pam writes, now that jails are also playing the role of prisons, they need to make sure they get robust prisoner reentry programs in place to ensure that individuals are getting the training they need to succeed after returning to the community. And Paul says, this is really a wake-up call to get rid of the source of the problem, draconian drug laws. Thank you, Paul. For tiny amounts and three strikes. Any word on whether there's consideration of fixing these? Well, there's a three strikes measure, I think, on November in ballot. Yes. Yeah, so we'll be covering it when we do our election coverage. Thea from Sonoma says, what I haven't heard yet is that realignment finally begins to make the county district attorneys economically responsible for their charging decisions. Heretofore, the rest of us in the state had to pick up what is a huge tab for imprisoning nonviolent offenders. DA should be held accountable for the decisions they make, and this is a first step towards that goal.
I think that we're going to have to see a change in the culture in many district attorneys' offices around the state. This is one of the problems why we have such disparity in the counties is you have 58 different district attorneys. They all stand for re-election. And they operate with very different philosophies. I think also we need to change, at least among district attorneys, there's this mentality of kind of the notch on the belt where you get the conviction and you get the person sent to prison and that improves your status among your colleagues. I think that is present in a lot of district attorney offices around the state.
Also gets more votes in your mind, right? You bring up those numbers.
Yeah. It's things like that we need to address. Those are subtle realities. They're not always clear, but they do have an impact on the system and whether or not that system is going to operate effectively.
There's a caller who I know is familiar to both of you and probably a number of our other listeners, Barry Crisberg, joining us from UC Berkeley. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Michael, I want to make a couple of quick points. First, on this issue of the supposed crime spike in Fresno, which Fresno County has been claiming for years. I just want to point out that if you compare September of last year to June of this year, the property crime spike amounts to 6 crimes, and the violent crimes have gone from 272 in September 11 to 240, have actually dropped by 22. So, as President Obama says, you can't just make this stuff up. The second thing, in terms of our incarceration patterns, not only is pretrial an issue, but generally the jails still have a fairly large number of nonviolent, non-dangerous people. And if we had smart policies at the front door of the jail, this could be solved. The classic example being the so-called taco lady in Sacramento County, a woman who was arrested selling tacos in front of Walmart. The police find out she doesn't have a license to sell the stuff. There's immigration issues. She spent over 2 weeks in the Sacramento County Jail at taxpayer expense, and her kids put in foster care. I mean, to the extent that we make decisions like that, yeah, we're going to get what we pay for.
Yeah. Barry, let me just ask you directly, because I know you've done a lot of research on this, and there's been a good deal of confusion, and I think the public would like more illumination on this. I asked Secretary Kate whether he felt that realignment has endangered public safety, and of course his answer was no, and that's yours as well?
Absolutely. I think public safety, any measure, all the measures we have are in the positive direction. It has not done it. Mm-hmm. I think, by and large, the Department of Corrections has done a very responsible job of implementing it. My only quarrel is I think we could go a little bit further, and I don't really think there's a need to go above the court cap. Some relatively modest reforms within the spirit of what we're already doing could get us there.
It's Barry Crisberg, who's, of course, with UC Berkeley Law, calling over the transom. Michael Montgomery.
Well, I want to go back to the point in terms of pretrial populations. You know, quite a number of jails in the state are under federal consent decrees, meaning they have a cap. They can't become too overcrowded. That means that right now, every day, sheriffs are making decisions on who to release. And so that is happening, actually, without the kind of program that Dan was talking about in Santa Cruz County. That's putting a lot of pressure on the sheriff's department to decide, who should they release early and who shouldn't they? We're seeing, more departments are using electronic monitoring as a solution to that. In some ways, people are being released.
But how much of it is based on the most recent conviction? That's something, again, that those who are concerned about the way realignment is working or not working have brought up over and over again.
I want to address that because I think it's an important point. Counties feel they got a lot of counties were surprised when they started seeing the number of felons coming into their supervision. These are people being released from state lockup and their profiles. Even in San Francisco, they were surprised by that. Can they manage it? San Francisco says they can. But you are talking about felons who have been in and out of state lockup for many years. It doesn't mean rehabilitation can't work. It just means we have to be careful when we refer to nonviolent felons and really be clear what we're talking about.
Can I just highlight? It's an important point.
Michael.
Look it. The fact is, if you've got somebody who's been in and out of prison for many years, they're going to come back into the street. And what they reflect is the failure of the system. And so if we are going to create a system, an effective criminal justice system that improves the potential and makes it more likely that the criminal will become a non-criminal, we've got to move in this direction. You can't just cycle people into prison, cycle them out, and then wait to see what happens.
But you know why I'm asking this question, Dan. You can look at a guy's record and his sheet has all kinds of violent crimes and then suddenly he's busted for something that's maybe minor and they're looking at that and they're judging on that basis?
It may be. But, it's not unusual to have somebody, the 50-year-old junkie who's been through the system numerous times and then finally they hit a certain point in their life that say, I can't do this anymore. I want to change. That's when we need to be there and provide that. And a lot of times people age out of this stuff. Sometimes they don't age out for a while. It takes time. But
Michael, you want to add something?
Well, no, I think what we're seeing in counties and at the state level is a much more focus on risk. In the past, they would make judgments purely based on their career, on their record. There's a much more sophisticated tools now that assess the risks based on a lot of other factors.
They've got software.
Well, sort of. Questionnaires, at least. And so that's an important shift, and we're seeing more and more counties using those kinds of tools, which are much more effective in determining, the risk levels for a particular felon.
We'll go to more of your calls, and we'll bring Paul on as our next caller. Paul, welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Michael. I've worked in the criminal justice system for 30 years since I was a prisoner. I was arrested and did 3 months, and then after that I came out and got a job working. And so I interview prisoners every day. And the number one problem is that the drug addiction stuff. San Francisco has an excellent drug treatment program using ear acupuncture. And when I went to medical school, I tried to introduce chiropractic in, but that didn't go anywhere. But we have a new sheriff, Ross McRaney, who had an excellent series of programs lined up. Unfortunately, politics intervened, but they really have to do something about providing jobs and education for these prisoners, because basically I tell high school teachers I talk to, I say, when you're done with them, if you don't get them aligned, I'm going to be dealing with the next. And my job is to defend them and try and get them programs and get them into something that they will stay in. And the biggest problem really is drug addiction. If we had a better drug treatment program, and in medical school they taught us the best treatment for drug addiction is ear acupuncture, which San Francisco has, chiropractic, and amino acids. Those three things, if we would spend a little bit of money on those three things, we could get 50% of the people off addictions.
All right, Paul, I thank you for the call, and we'll go to another call here. Ivan, you're next.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for the show. I think that there's an underlying factor that's not being talked about here. I think that a majority of the prisoners right now in California are impoverished, and the policies that we have in place really do discriminate against them. I think if you have the right resources to untangle yourself from the system, you can. And if you can't, well, you end up stuck in that rut for very minor things, and we're not paying too much attention to that.
All right, I thank you. When these issues are brought up, like drugs and poverty and so forth, of course, we're facing economic crisis in the state, and even though we're well aware, many of us, and sensitive to these issues, we're also there are prisons that we have and walls that we can't go beyond in terms of doing the sorts of things that perhaps we would like to do. I don't mean to bring that in as a pessimistic note, but it's just a reality check. Speaking of reality checks, let me check in a couple of emails here. This is from Paul, who writes, realignment is a dodge by the governor and the Department of Corrections to follow the recommendations of the Duke-Majin Commission. It recommended that a sentencing commission be established to reduce the long sentences that are being handed down in California, a result of tough-on-crime legislation passed in the last 30 years. Instead of rolling up our sleeves and reducing draconian sentences and unveiling rehabilitation programs, the politicians and bureaucrats continue to hide. The result is that counties strapped by reduced property taxes are now to care for state prisoners. The redevelopment monies have been taken back by the state, making this a double whammy for the counties.
As a longtime advocate of a sentencing commission, he's correct. That has been one of the that recommendation has been on the table for 30 years. And for whatever reason, because of the politics of Sacramento, we've never been able to get a sentencing commission. In many ways, realignment was kind of a backdoor way to do it because it restricted the number of parolees that could be sent back to state prison. But it didn't restrict the number of people coming in.
Had three strikes too.
Well, there's only two ways you can control a prison population: the number of people you admit and how long they stay. So if you've got long sentence, if you admitting a lot and they're staying for a long time, your population is going to go up. Your average daily population is going to go up. What they tried to do with realignment is reduce the parole population, because parole was accounting for 2/3 of the admissions every year.
What about this idea, though, Michael Montgomery, that it's a numbers game in some ways? I don't mean to use the word game too pejoratively here, but in some respects it's that is the idea that measuring constitutional health can be done in terms of numbers, or should be done in terms of numbers.
Well, the court has produced a number, and that is the reality. The department is trying to contest that number. One thing to point out is that when we talk about design capacity, and the court is saying that the population needs to be at 137.5% of that, that's one inmate per cell. And this is an argument the department makes, that in fact, in many situations, you have two inmates per cell. I want to go back to this drug treatment issue. Drugs are a huge – substance abuse is a massive problem. For 50 years, California has been trying to find the magic bullet to create rehabilitation programs in prison that will reduce recidivism. They have utterly failed to do that. Time and study after study have shown no correlation, with the exception of substance abuse programs. But the only ones that have shown effectiveness are when you have in-prison treatment followed by treatment that continues outside the prison. That means there has to be this continuity of services, and that is something the Department of Corrections is working on. They're reaching out to community groups. Whether they can do that, we will see.
I'm going to have to mention something else here, because you know, I did some prison work a number of years ago, and a lot of prison reform and rehabilitation comes about by people who find God. Or, I mean, there's a lot of atheists out there and agnostics who aren't going to like to hear that, but they find religion, they get the zeal about it, and suddenly...
You have to have a cause. You have to have something that motivates you. And so if it's religion, if it's, you know, if it's something else, it's family.
Drugs, a job, family,
yeah,
whatever.
Family, right. That's the key.
Well, there has to be a decision by the inmate to want to change. I mean, that's really important.
Some emails, Dan from San Rafael writes, there's a precedent for concluding that releasing criminals to be rehabilitated in their communities will fail. When Reagan was governor, the mental hospitals largely were emptied with the expectation that the mentally ill would be rehabilitated by community mental health organizations. The program was a total failure.
Well, can I respond to that? That's an important, because that often comes up. That's actually the problem with that is they didn't let the money follow the policy change. So what realignment does here is the money goes to the counties so the counties can set up the programs. Reagan didn't do that.
After the money was taken away from the
Reagan
counties.
Took the money away, and
right.
That's
assuming counties are going to use the money to set up the program.
Well,
and many counties aren't. They're investing it in jail, putting into increasing jail space.
That's right, and that's a problem we're going to face.
Let's read a couple of other emails here. Sam writes on our website, and you can, of course, put your comments on our website or on our Facebook page. He says, I've been volunteering to work in prison over the summer as an instructor at San Quentin, and one thing which has become even more apparent than before during my work, there are the absurdities caused by the three strikes law. Instead of forcing prisoners into the counties, the victims of the three strikes law should be released early. Otherwise, we're simply plowing more and more of our precious state finances into an overcrowded behemoth of a prison system, and we are punishing people exceedingly harsh for petty and minor crimes. 25 years for petty theft is both cruel and unusual. Rewrites on our webpage, currently in California, there are laws in place that make a felony bar to employment, a life sentence, no matter what one's prison sentence was. And what about the considerable California legal and policy impediments that make it very difficult for ex-felons to secure employment? We need better policies now and make record expungement a real possibility for felons at some point in their lives. Okay, a lot of good ideas here. And gentlemen, thank you for the work you do. Good to have had you both here with us in studio. Michael Montgomery, reporter for KQED News and public safety reporter for California Watch. You can see the program Prison Break, the television special hosted by Scott Schaefer this Friday, 7:30 on Channel 9. Dan McAlare is executive director and co-founder of Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. We also spoke with Alan Hopper of the ACLU and with Matthew Cate from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Judy Campbell, Tina Lauberg, and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.